All right, so picture this. You know, you've got a court date coming up, right? You're all ready to go. Your arguments are prepped. You even got the good suit dry cleaned and everything. But then, oh, surprise, the date got changed and nobody told you. Now, you might think, well, hey, easy win, right? They didn't show up, not so fast. As we're about to find out in today's deep dive, we're going to be taking a close look at Kulis v. Smith. It's a 1964 Arizona Supreme Court case. And let's just say it really throws a wrench into that whole no-show means automatic win thing.
Yeah, it really does. What's so interesting about this case, you know, is that it gets down to the nitty-gritty of Rule 55, the rule that's all about default judgments. It really clarifies the difference between a real default and a judgment on the merits, which, as any lawyer will tell you, is huge.
Okay, so let's get into it. Can you set the scene for us? What exactly happened in Kulis v. Smith?
Okay, so we've got Smith, and he's suing Kulis over, I think it was some unpaid debts. Now, Kulis, he responds to that initial complaint. He even goes so far as to file a counterclaim, you know, showing he's not messing around, he's involved. But then they change the trial date, and wouldn't you know it, nobody tells Kulis, so he misses it, and wham, judgment against him.
You know, on the surface, it really does look like a classic default situation.
Yeah, you'd think missing the actual trial would be like, game over, you lose automatically. But the court didn't see it that way.
Not quite. See, the Arizona Supreme Court, they ruled that this wasn't actually a true default judgment under Rule 55B. And the reason why is that Kulis had already answered the complaint and filed that counterclaim. So because of that, the case was considered to be at issue, you know. Now, Rule 55B, that does require a 3-day notice period before you can get a true default judgment. But here's the catch. That only applies when the defendant hasn't done anything. Like, no response, no defense, nothing.
Okay, so then what about this whole otherwise defend part? What does that actually mean when you're, like, practicing law? Well, now, that's where things get interesting. The court in Kulis v. Smith, they made it very clear that otherwise defend, well, it's more than just filing an answer. It's about all those little procedural things we lawyers do, you know, like motions to dismiss, or maybe you're challenging how the defendant was served, or requesting more specific information from the plaintiff. All those things, they show that the defendant is actually participating, even if they're not, like, diving into the specific accusations against them yet.
So Kulis filing that counterclaim, that was a smart move then to kind of change things from, like, oh, he's ignoring us, to we're in a legal battle now.
Exactly. Once the defendant actually engages with the complaint, they're basically saying, all right, let's go, let's argue this thing out, let's look at the facts. And that's what ended up happening here. The judgment against Kulis, that was seen as a judgment on the merits, meaning the court made its decision based on the evidence, not just because he missed the trial.
This is making me rethink this whole default judgment thing. It's not just about showing up, it's about really being in the game.
You got it. And it shows why it's so important to know the rules like the back of your hand. Think about it. You're advising a client and they've answered the complaint, but they're just not ready for trial. You got to understand, they can still lose even if the other side's a no-show.
Wow, this case is already full of surprises. But there's more, right? Didn't Kulis argue that no one even told him about the trial date change?
Mm-hmm.
What did the court say about that?
Yes. That's where this presumption of regularity thing comes in. Basically, it's this legal idea that assumes the court clerks, you know, they're doing their jobs right, they sent out the notices, did all that. It's not that they're saying Kulis is lying. It's more about putting the burden on him to prove that he was never notified.
So if he wanted to fight that presumption, what could he have done? Did he have any options?
Oh, absolutely. He could gather evidence, I mean, anything to support his claim, like affidavits, you know, sworn statements from himself and his lawyer saying they never got the notice, or maybe phone records showing the court never called. But, you know, he just said he wasn't notified and that's it. That just wasn't enough to convince the court.
This really highlights how important documentation is in law. It's not just about being right. It's about being able to show the receipts.
100%. And you know what? That's a point we're going to see again and again as we go deeper into this case. Even if your client has a legitimate gripe, if they don't have the paperwork to back it up, well, it's going to be an uphill battle.
So no documentation, that's strike one against Kulis. Was there anything else that contributed to him losing?
Yeah, and this one's kind of a tough one. So Kulis did eventually try to fight the judgment, you know, using Rule 60C. That rule lets you get some relief if there was a mistake or, you know, something you can be excused for. But here's the thing, get this. He waited 2 whole years to file that motion.
Whoa, 2 years. That's a pretty long time to wait.
Yeah, it is. And the court didn't buy it. They basically said, look, you snooze, you lose. Rule 60C, it's not a get out of jail free card. You got to act fast.
So not only did he not have the proof, but he also waited way too long to try and fight the judgment. Tough break for Kulis, but a good lesson for any lawyer out there listening.
Yeah, for sure. This case really shows how important it is to be on top of things, to be on time in legal proceedings. You know how they say justice delayed is justice denied? That's what happened here. In Kulis v. Smith, that delay really cost Kulis the case.
All right, so we've already gotten some big takeaways. Always have your documents, know those rules inside and out, and don't drag your feet. Be quick about it. Before we move on, are there any, like, really insightful quotes from the Kulis v. Smith opinion that you think would resonate with our listeners?
Actually, there's this great quote from an earlier case, Bass v. Hoagland. The court actually used it in their opinion. It says, "When a defendant answers, the plaintiff must prove their case. Absence at trial doesn't warrant default. It warrants a judgment on the proof." It really gets to the heart of things. Even if someone messes up procedurally, they don't just lose their rights.
Right. It reinforces that the courts want to see resolutions based on the facts, not just technicalities.
Exactly. It's all about making sure things are fair, you know, that everyone has a fair shot.
Okay. So we've learned a lot from Kulis v. Smith so far. For our listeners, you know, maybe those rushing off to court right now, can we sum up the top three practical things they should remember?
For sure. Number one, and I can't stress this enough, document everything. You're saying you didn't get a notice or there was some procedural problem. You got to have the evidence. Don't just say it happened. Number two, know the rules. You got to understand the difference between a default judgment and a judgment on the merits. If your client has answered, be prepared to go to trial, even if the other side doesn't show. And lastly, number three, don't wait. If you got to challenge a judgment, do it fast. Time is everything, especially with motions under Rule 60C.
Great advice. Real gems of wisdom for any lawyer, but especially those handling civil litigation.
They really highlight how important it is to be thorough, to pay attention to details, and to really understand the rules of the legal system.
Well, it seems like we've successfully made our way through the ins and outs of Kulis v. Smith.
And we found some pretty valuable insights along the way.
Definitely. But before we wrap things up, let's leave our listeners with something to think about.
Imagine you were Kulis's lawyer. What arguments could you have made to try and overturn that judgment? Could you have shown any evidence to challenge that presumption of regularity or explain that 2-year delay in filing the motion? This case really makes you think about legal strategy and how crucial it is to act on time.
That's a great question to leave our listeners with. It makes you think about what you would do in a similar situation and hopefully avoid the same traps that Kulis fell into.
Exactly. It's all about learning from the past so we can do better in the future. You know, it's easy to kind of get lost in all the, like, procedural stuff in Kulis v. Smith. But what I think is really interesting is how it makes us think about, you know, following the rules versus getting a just outcome.
Yeah, that's true. We hear all the time about how important it is to know the rules in law. But this case really shows how sometimes sticking to those rules too closely can lead to results that just feel, well, unfair.
Right, exactly. And I think that's why Kulis v. Smith is still so important for lawyers today. It reminds us that legal strategy, it's not just about knowing which rules to cite. It's also about understanding those big ideas of fairness and due process, you know, the things that our legal system is supposed to be based on.
So going back to Kulis and what happened to him, what do you think his lawyer could have done differently, strategy-wise, that might have changed the outcome?
Well, one thing they could have done was go after the substance of Smith's case more aggressively. Remember, even though Kulis missed the trial, the court said Smith still had to prove his case, you know, based on the actual facts.
So even though Kulis wasn't there, his lawyer could have focused on finding weaknesses in Smith's evidence, even if it meant doing it in writing instead of at the trial.
Exactly. If they could have shown that Smith's case was weak or that he didn't have enough evidence, it might have made a difference, even without Kulis there.
That's interesting. So even if your client is in a tough spot procedurally, you can't forget about those core arguments about the actual case itself.
Absolutely. You got to use every tool you have. Be smart. Be strategic.
Now, let's go back to that otherwise defend language in Rule 55 for a sec. I think it's worth really emphasizing how important that difference is.
Oh, it's huge. Remember, a real default judgment, the kind under Rule 55B, that only happens when the defendant completely ignores the lawsuit. But as soon as they do anything that could be seen as defending, even something small, it changes everything.
So something as simple as filing a motion to dismiss because they think the court doesn't have jurisdiction, that could be enough to avoid a default judgment.
That's right. It's all about showing the court that you're not just ignoring them, you're participating in the process, even if you're not getting into the details of the accusations yet.
This really shows how important it is to know the rules and understand all the little details of civil procedure. One little mistake can have big consequences.
Absolutely. And it brings us back to that key point, document everything.
You're really emphasizing that, and I think for good reason.
It's crucial. Imagine if Kulis had kept really good records of all the times he tried to contact the court about the trial date change, or if he had proof that he never got the notice, things might have gone differently.
You know, thinking about that, it makes me wonder about the role of technology in all of this. These days, we have email, texts, online court portals, so many ways to create a clear record of everything.
That's a great point. Those tools can be really helpful for lawyers, for staying organized, and for having solid evidence if you need it.
It's like building a digital fortress around your case. If you need to prove you did something or that a certain conversation happened, you've got that digital paper trail to back you up.
Exactly. And that digital trail can be really convincing in court. It's often harder to argue with an email timestamp or a phone log than someone's memory of what happened.
So even though Kulis v. Smith is from way back in 1964, the things it teaches us are maybe even more relevant now with all this technology.
That's the thing about legal precedent. It changes and adapts along with the world.
And that leads us to another big takeaway from Kulis v. Smith, Don't Wait to Act. We talked about how Kulis waiting 2 years to file his Rule 60C motion was a big problem. But what does that mean for lawyers today, practically speaking?
It's not just about deadlines. It's about understanding that courts expect things to move quickly.
So even if there isn't an official deadline, we should always be thinking about time, like acting with a sense of urgency.
Exactly. Courts have a ton of cases, and they expect everyone to be proactive and efficient.
It's about respecting the court's time and showing that you're serious about your client's case.
Right. And in a world where things move so fast, there's really no excuse for unnecessary delays.
It goes back to what we were saying about technology. With email, electronic filing, and online portals, there's no reason why a lawyer can't communicate with the court or file a motion quickly.
It's about using those tools to your advantage, for your clients, and for your own professional reputation.
Okay, so we've covered a lot, from the details of Rule 55 to why documentation and acting fast are so important. But I think it's good to come back to that idea of fairness that's behind all of this.
Yeah, that's a crucial point. Kulis v. Smith, it's not just some boring legal case about rules. It's about a guy who felt like he didn't get a fair chance to present his side.
And even though the court ruled against him, the case reminds us that we always have to be watching out for justice, lawyers, and the courts too.
It shows that tension between following the rules and making sure everyone gets a fair hearing.
And that's something lawyers have to deal with every day.
It's a balancing act, and it means thinking carefully about the facts of each case and what's really important in the big picture.
So as we wrap up this part of our deep dives into Kulis v. Smith, What are the main things our listeners should keep in mind as they work on their own cases?
Well, first of all, remember that knowledge is power. You got to understand the rules, not just on the surface, but really deeply.
Second, documentation is your best friend. Keep good records of everything you and your client do, so there's no confusion or questions later on.
And third, act fast and be decisive. Don't let procedural mistakes or delays hurt your client's case.
Those are great insights. I think they offer a really solid plan for success in the legal world.
It's about having that legal expertise, but also thinking strategically, being committed to fairness, and being really diligent.
So we spent this whole deep dive really getting into the weeds of Kulis v. Smith, and I think we found some really useful stuff for lawyers to think about.
Yeah, you know, it's a case that was decided a while ago, but it still has a lot to teach us about how civil procedure works and why it's so important to think strategically.
And one of the things that really stuck with me was that last question you asked about what Kulis's lawyer could have done differently, you know, to maybe change how things turned out. Let's pretend we're legal strategists for a minute and really explore that.
I like that. Yeah, like we're going back in time with what we know now and trying to come up with a different plan.
Exactly. So knowing what we know about how important documentation and acting quickly are to the court, where do you think Kulis's lawyer could have made the biggest difference?
Well, I think The fact that they didn't have any proof to back up the claim that Kulis wasn't notified, that was a big miss. Imagine if he had kept track of every single time he tried to contact the court about the trial date, like phone records, emails, even those certified letters. That would have been strong evidence against that presumption of regularity.
That's like you said before, it's not enough to just be right. You got to be able to prove it.
Exactly. And these days, with all the ways we can communicate, creating that paper trail should be automatic for any lawyer.
Right. Even something as simple as an email with a read receipt could have made all the difference in this case.
Absolutely. And besides the documentation, I also think Kulis's lawyer could have done a better job explaining that two-year delay in filing the Rule 60C motion, you know, making a stronger argument for why it was excusable.
Yeah, that delay really seemed to bother the court.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of arguments could have helped smooth that over?
What if they had shown evidence that during those 2 years, they were busy trying other things, like negotiating a settlement with Smith or exploring different legal strategies? Or maybe there was some unexpected situation that really prevented them from acting sooner, like a serious illness or a family emergency, something that would make the court understand and be more sympathetic.
So it's not just saying, oops, I forgot. It's more about showing that the delay was unavoidable or that you were still working hard for your client during that time.
Exactly. Courts like it when you're upfront and proactive. If you made a mistake or something got delayed, admit it, explain what happened, and show that you're trying to fix it.
It's all about being a good advocate for your client, even when things get messy.
It is, and it shows how important it is for us as lawyers to be diligent and competent.
So, to sum up, if Kulis's lawyer had been more convincing about the lack of notice, had good documentation, and had a better explanation for the delay, maybe things could have gone differently.
It's hard to say for sure, of course, but it's definitely possible.
And that's what I think is so interesting about this case. It makes you think about how to approach legal strategy, and how to always be looking for ways to do better.
It reminds us that even when it seems like you can't win, there's always room for creative thinking and fighting hard for your client.
Well said. So, for our listeners who are probably thinking about how they would have handled this case, what's the most important thing they should take away from our deep dive?
I'd say it's this. Never underestimate how important it is to be prepared, to be thorough, and to really know the rules. Those are the things that make a successful lawyer.
And never forget about the bigger picture, you know, the idea of justice and making sure your client's rights are protected.
That's what makes being a lawyer so tough, but also so rewarding.
Well, I think we've done a good job of exploring Kulis v. Smith and finding some really valuable lessons along the way.
I agree. It's been a really interesting deep dive.
And to all our listeners out there, we hope this episode has given you some new things to think about, and that you'll approach your own cases with even more care and a strategic mindset. Until next time, keep those legal brains sharp.
And always remember, document everything.